Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
G'day, mates. I'm down here in Australia right now doing a tour. Very excited about this. But I thought I would share with you something that's preoccupied my mind a little bit about coming to Australia, and that's everything here that's trying to kill me. It's another Free for All Friday episode here on the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And today we're talking about all the stuff that can kill you in Australia. You've probably heard it before, but let's go through it today because you know what? I'm here and I'm keeping an eye out to make sure none of these things try to get into my hotel room or get me when I'm going on a walk in the park or something like that. Now, of course, when you look at the fatality rates here in Australia, a lot of lovely blokes here, and they all seem to be doing quite fine. They take everything in stride. Me, when I see signs like saltwater crocodiles, don't come near this water. Stay on the path. Don't go in the bushes where there are snakes. Like, oh, you guys handle this all really well. And there's like kids running around and everyone seems to be fine, but they do a good job managing it. But it's still just amazing the kind of wildlife that you have in Australia. Because if you think about it, Australia is, it's an island nation. It's an island continent. And when you have places that are islands, they become isolated from other kinds of genetic influences. And there are animals and plants that will evolve that are spectacular, unusual, things that you won't find anywhere else in the world. Another place like this, if you want to look it up, Madagascar. So look up pictures of the trees on Madagascar. It is breathtaking, the kind of animals and plant life on the island of Madagascar. I mean, the stuff has been there for like millions of years and hasn't interacted with other migrating animals or plant seeds, things like that. So you see a similar thing in Australia. By the way, if you want a show on Netflix to really binge on, Australian Border Patrol. My wife and I watched that a ton a while ago. And they take it seriously because they're on an island, it would be easy for a foreign species to come in and dominate the environment and take over that hasn't evolved to deal with it yet. So in the Australian Border Patrol show, and I dealt with this going through security. Whenever I come into Australia, at least, I feel like they go through my bags. They go through everything with a fine-toothed comb to see if, make sure I'm not bringing in anything. But you look on the Australian Border Patrol, you have people who come from like Hong Kong and China with like bird eggs and meat and plant seeds. They're like, oh no, you can't have any of this stuff. And it's a serious fine. If you don't get in trouble if you declare it. If you just declare it on the flight, say, I have this stuff, you declare it, and they say, okay, let's look at this. You can't bring it into the country. We're confiscating it, but you're free to go. If you don't declare it or you lie about it, then you end up paying like a $400 or $500 fine. And they're serious about that because it can wreak havoc on their environment, which was described very well in the the Simpsons episode, Bart versus Australia. Here's some clips from that. When Bart gets in trouble with the Australian government for tricking one of its young citizens into calling, being on the phone with him for a long time in order to check to see if the toilets really flow the other way. They don't. Long episode, classic Simpsons episode, Bart versus Australia. So they have to go, and the Simpson family has to go to Australia to settle this legal mess. And they go, and Bart tries to bring his frog with him, and they have to dispose of that at the airport.
Here.
What does that sign say? I thought they spoke English in this country.
It says
foreign flora and fauna prohibited.
You can't bring in outside plants or animals. Any foreign creature you bring in could upset the environmental balance.
Oh. Sorry, girl. I don't want to get in any more trouble down here. I'll pick you up on the way home.
So then the frog heads out of the airport through a window and then goes on its way.
These bloody things are everywhere. They're in the lift, in a lorry, in the bone wizard, and all over the Malunga Gulichuk.
They're holding a frog in an Australian shop that have now massively populated.
They're like kangaroos, but they're reptiles, they is.
We have them in America. They're called bullfrogs.
What? That's an odd name. I'd have called them chazwazzers.
So then now they have to flee from the country because Bart, I think he painted Richard Nixon on his behind because the prime minister was supposed to give him a swift kick in the butt as his kind of punishment with the boot. And that was declared to be inhumane. And they have to evacuate the embassy. And they're in a helicopter.
Hey, did we get to land in an aircraft carrier?
No, sir. The closest vessel is the USS Walter Mondale. It's a laundry ship. They'll take you the rest of the way.
And now all the frogs are eating their crops.
Hey, look! Those frogs are eating all their crops!
Well, that's what happens when you introduce foreign species into an ecosystem that can't handle them.
And then hiding underneath the helicopter is a koala. So, well, that's all fun and games. Now let's talk about stuff that can kill you. So, like I said, they have to keep track of these foreign species because the animals there are very unique. And one thing that's made these animals in Australia unique is just how dangerous they are. So, for example, Australia has the deadliest snake in the world. That would be the inland taipan. Also commonly known as the western taipan, the small-scaled snake, or the fierce snake. It's called fierce, actually, not because of its temperament. Is actually a pretty peaceful snake. It's not out to get you. It's because its venom is considered to be fierce. Based on the median lethal dose value in mice, the venom of the inland taipan is by far the most toxic of any snake, much more so than even that of sea snakes. And yeah, yes, they also have sea snakes there. When I was going in Cairns, Australia, back in 2008, for World Youth Day, we got to go up to swim at the Great Coral Reef, and it was amazing. The Great Barrier Reef. It was a coral reef, the Great Barrier Reef. And we went there, and we got to snorkel there, and it was absolutely amazing and beautiful. I'm so glad I got the chance to be able to do that. But I remember being on the boat. We were going out there, and I look out into the water, and I see these snakes swimming in the water. And I'm like, oh, those are sea snakes. Those are really poisonous. Man, I hope they aren't at the coral reef we're going to be at pretty soon. I'm like, man, everything here just wants to kill me. But the taipan is even more deadlier than the sea snake. It has the most toxic venom of any reptile when tested on human heart cell culture. Unlike most snakes, the inland taipan is a specialist hunter of mammals, so its venom is specially adapted to kill warm-blooded species. It is estimated that one bite possesses enough lethality to kill at least 100 fully grown men. Depending on the nature of the bite, it has the potential to kill someone in as little as 30 to 45 minutes if left untreated. It's a very fast and agile snake that can strike instantly and with extreme accuracy. Though it is related to the coastal taipan. So the inland taipan is very shy. The coastal taipan is not as venomous, but is really, really deadly. It's really fierce. The coastal taipan will come at you and try to attack. So yeah, so I'm keeping an eye out for the snakes. I don't want to run into them here. So Australia's got the deadliest snake. It's also got the deadliest spider. Deadliest spider is considered to be the Australian funnel web spider. Australian funnel web spiders are one of the most dangerous groups of spiders in the world and are regarded by some to be the most deadly, both in terms of clinical cases and venom toxicity. Examination of bite records has implicated wandering males in most, if not all, fatal Australian funnel web spider bites to humans. Adult males, recognized by the modified terminal segment of the palp, tend to wander during the warmer months of the year looking for receptive females for mating. They are attracted to water and are often found in swimming pools into which they fall while wandering. Though the spiders can survive immersion in water for several hours and can deliver a bite when removed from the water. Oh, yeah, I don't think I'm going to go swimming here anytime soon. And you'll find out when we get to the marine creatures that can kill you here. So these guys get, I guess they're really angry and frustrated because they're walking around trying to like find a female to mate with and they can't. So I guess they get mad and then they bite human beings. These are like the original incels. Incels are those guys that call themselves involuntary celibates because they're jerks and they're weirdos and women want nothing to do with them. And so they lash out and get super violent. I've talked about them on the show previously. I guess these spiders kind of get like that. They also show up in garages and yards in suburban Sydney. Contrary to commonly held belief, the funnel web spiders are not able to jump, though they run quickly. And fun story, when Tim Staples went not too long ago, he was staying at kind of an old monastery and with Father Larry, Father Funny Larry. I tell him that because he's a regular comedian. He's great. Tim was staying in a monastery here, and there was a spider in his room, and he like hit it with his shoe, and like the spider started charging at him, and he hit it with his shoe again, and people were like, Tim, what kind of spider was it? And he described it, and they said, Tim, that's a funnel web spider. It could kill you. Its bite could kill you in 90 minutes. He's like, oh, I can't believe I went after the spider that could kill people. And that's why I said, I'm not staying in the old monastery when I have to go and visit to Australia. So they have, I mean, with both the taipans, the snakes, and the spiders, because it's their common, there are a lot of anti-venoms available at hospitals. So they're really more of a danger to people who live in rural communities or for young children. Because even if a child, we have anti-venom, they have such a small body mass, the venom could spread so quickly, it could kill them before you can administer an anti-venom to be able to save them. So deadliest snake, deadliest spider. Next one up is the deadliest marine creature, if not the least, at least it's the deadliest octopus, if not the deadliest marine creature. And what is that? The blue-ringed octopus you can find here. It's all throughout the coral reefs in the Pacific and the Indian. Another reason I'm like, there's stuff in the coral reef that can kill me. You know, that was back in 2008, so I'm some 23-year-old guy. I think I'm invincible. Why not? I'll go out and snorkel out there. I remember actually in our tour, I was snorkeling and I got a cramp in my leg and like I could barely swim. And I was like waving my arms to the lifeguard for the company. And I was like, hey, help, help. And he just kind of looked down at me and shrugged his shoulder. And I like slowly managed to like dog paddle my way back to the boat. And I was like, thanks a lot, buddy. But they're really cool, though, if you can get the right tour company to take you out to go and see it. So, all right. So the blue-ringed octopuses are a series of they're part of the genus Haplocklana, and it's four species of very venomous octopus, octopi, that you can find in the Pacific and Indian Oceans from Japan to Australia. They can be identified by their yellowish skin and characteristic blue and black rings that change color dramatically when the animal is threatened. Direct contact is necessary to be envenomated or bitten. Faced with danger, the octopus's first instinct is to flee. If the threat persists, the octopus will go into a defensive stance, show its blue rings, and if it's cornered and touched, the person would be in danger of being bitten and envenomated. I'm going to talk here about I'll play a video here of a conservationist talking about these blue-ringed octopuses. What's nice is they're extremely venomous, but they're very docile. You're only going to get bit by a blue-ringed octopus if you like corner it, threaten it, try to pick it up. And I've seen videos of people picking these things up at the beach, and I'm like, oh gosh, don't do that, because that venom can kill you in just like a few minutes. I mean, it's unbelievable what it can do to you. So I'll play a clip with this conservationist explaining the venom is actually very unique to the blue-ringed octopus.
But what makes them so toxic? Well, they're cool in that they don't make their own venom. They use other organisms, bacteria they find out here, and they hide them in their salivary glands. Now, these
First, I love that, their salivary glands, like their salivary glands. That's why I love laboratory instead of laboratory.
Toxins that are produced, the things called TTX or tetrodotoxins, are secreted by the bacteria. So when a blue ring, for example, chases a crab, it jumps on it and it uses its bird-like beak to chew a hole in the exoskeleton and then spits saliva into it. As its saliva goes in, the toxin goes with it and it attacks the nerves and it basically stops a nerve impulse from traveling down your nerve. So what that means is you become paralyzed.
So here's the problem with that, though, how it kills human beings. So according to this article, the tetrodotoxin results in victims being fully aware of their surroundings but unable to move. Because of the way this paralysis occurs, they have no way of signaling for help or way of indicating distress. The victim remains conscious and alert in a manner similar to curare, another kind of poison. The effect is temporary and will fade over a period of hours as the tetrodotoxin is metabolized. But here's the problem with that. Because the venom primarily kills through paralysis, victims are frequently saved if artificial respiration is started and maintained before cyanosis or hypotension can develop. So the problem is you can be bitten and your system will metabolize the toxin in a few hours, but if it stops your nerve signals from flowing, that includes the nerves to your respiratory system. So you're unable to breathe, you're paralyzed, you can't breathe, and you need someone to provide artificial respiration to you on a ventilator, otherwise you'll you'll die. So it's you're conscious, but you're unable to take a breath, and then you end up asphyxiating. So if you see a little octopus going around with bright blue rings on it, don't touch it. Just let it be, kiddos. Let it be. All right, here's the next one. So that's dangerous marine creature. Most dangerous reptile is easily that taipan snake, but the other kind of most dangerous reptile, most dangerous crocodile in the world is here, and that's the saltwater crocodile. The saltwater crocodile is claimed to be the largest living crocodilian. Males grow to a length of up to 20 feet and can weigh between 2,200 and 2,300 pounds. This is basically a car coming at you. This is a living, imagine a car that's alive and tries to eat you. So imagine you're in Cars and Lightning McQueen. Why do the cars in Cars have teeth, by the way? We know they have gas cans on their, we know they have gas tanks and a thing on the side of their car to put the gas in. If you ever saw Cars or its horrible dumpster fire of a sequel, Cars 2, they have the regular gas intake on the side of the car, yet they have mouths and teeth and tongues in the front. What do they need that for? We know that Mater in Cars 2 eats wasabi thinking it's ice cream. Did the cars and cars just end up eating all of us as part of a carpocalypse? I should really do. I've watched so many Pixar movies with my kids. I'm probably going to do a free-for-all Friday soon on all the disturbing questions that Pixar has raised for me. But that's not for today. So the saltwater crocodile would be like, imagine a station wagon coming to life and trying to eat you. That would be the saltwater crocodile. Says saltwater crocodile has a long history of attacking humans who unknowingly venture into its territory. As a result of its power, intimidating size, and speed, survival of a direct predatory attack is unlikely if the crocodile is able to make direct contact. The exact data on attacks are limited outside of Australia. One or two fatal attacks are reported per year, but the numbers have been going down because of extensive efforts by wildlife officials to put up warning signs at-risk rivers, lakes, beaches, and billabongs. Got to have the billabongs in Australia. And to show how scary it could be, I'll play you a clip from National Geographic talking about they're in Papua New Guinea, where saltwater crocs can also be found, and talking about an interview with someone who I think a relative didn't have a great encounter with one, didn't come out so well.
This region of Papua New Guinea provides the perfect habitat for both freshwater monsters and the most feared predator of all, the saltwater crocodile. Back in the village, I met a man called Lester with a terrifying story. 10 years ago, his mother was paddling a canoe in this area when a saltwater crocodile attacked. It leapt out of the water without warning and crushed her skull in its jaws. She died instantly.
How big?
This is very big, like crocodile. This canoe.
The size of this canoe?
Yeah.
Huge.
Very big.
What's the best way to keep me safe from crocodiles?
Check him net by looking at him.
He tells me to watch the water carefully.
If there's fish running away, or if they're even jumping out of the water, maybe a sign that crocodiles are coming.
Yeah, so apparently he just leapt up out of the boat, grabbed somebody's head, grabbed his mother's head, killed her instantly. So I'm not going to be swimming in any lakes or rivers or billabongs on my trip. I'm going to stay in my room. I'm going to listen. I'm going to eat my meat pies that are here and watch my Australian and New Zealand television. You know, I'm going to put on some Flight of the Conchords and be happy. The other most dangerous marine creature, so the most dangerous jellyfish is also here. So it's not just the rivers. Even if I go out in the salt water, you got to be careful. Now, when I went to the Great Barrier Reef, they had, what did they have there? They had a fence. So that probably kept out, I think, at least like the jellyfish and some of the other, the shark. I'm not even going to get into the sharks that are here. But around the reef where we were able to snorkel and swim, they had a metal grate, a fence separating it from the rest of the ocean. And that was a relief, actually, to see. If you don't have that, you might encounter the deadliest jellyfish in the world, and that's the box jellyfish. So it says the Medusa form of a box jellyfish has a squarish box-like bell, of course. From each of its four lower corners of this hangs a short pedalium or stalk, which bears one or more long, slender, hollow tentacles. The box jellyfish can move more rapidly than other jellyfish, with speeds of 20 feet per minute have been recorded. In Australia, fatalities are most often caused by the largest species of this class of jellyfish, the Charonyx fleckeri. They found the venom causes cells to become oh gosh, here we go. Causes your cells to become porous enough to allow potassium leakage, causing hyperkalemia, which can lead to cardiovascular collapse and death as quickly as within 2 to 5 minutes. In Australia, C. fleckeri has caused at least 64 deaths since the first report in 1883. The most recent deaths have been in children linked to their smaller body mass. In the Malay archipelago, where it's a bit more rural, in the Philippines, 20 to 40 die annually from these kinds of stings. Many Australian beaches are enclosed in nets and have vinegar placed in prominent positions to allow for rapid first aid. Here's a clip from another, this is an Animal Planet clip of Diana Nyad, the long-distance swimmer. She's trying to swim from Cuba to Florida and encounters a box jellyfish there, a swarm of them, and it's pretty painful to hear. So this is what can happen to the long-distance swimmers trying to swim at night when the jellyfish are most active.
Long-distance swimmer Diana Nyad has taken on the greatest challenge of her career, swimming all the way from Cuba to Florida, over 100 miles. But the moon draws deadly jellyfish up to the water's surface, putting her life in danger.
Whoa!
Diana?
Tense.
Diana's under attack.
Wow!
Diana, the jellyfish?
Yes, plenty of them. Come on!
Okay.
Come on!
Wow!
It's the box jellyfish.
Ow!
And they're everywhere.
Okay. Fire! Fire!
I am telling you, it was like a moment of science fiction.
Fire, 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 fire.
I sensed immediately that I had been dipped in hot, burning wax.
And they don't take her out of the water. They don't take her out of the water because if she were to get out of the water, she could not continue her swim to go for the record. It has to be continuous. Because if you could swim and get on the boat to take a break, well, then not anybody. I couldn't do that. 100 miles. I could probably barely get 100 feet in the ocean before I'm like, tapping out, folks. But so she stays in the water and she puts on a jellyfish protective suit. She's putting it on right now in the water, is in the video. So she's not getting out. She's putting on the suit as she's being stung.
Wow.
Still,
wow.
Still?
Wow. Oh, yeah.
Caught in a swarm, Diana is stung again and again. The pain is overwhelming. If she doesn't stay focused, she could sink and drown.
So if you're stung by multiple box jellyfish, this can be debilitating. It causes severe pain, it has effects on the heart, and it can seriously impair your ability to stay afloat. You may even drown.
Diana?
Give me the chills.
Here you go, yeah.
Paralyzing
yep.
my back.
Yep, okay.
She can't go back on the boat, or her record swim is finished. It will take all her willpower to resist the pain.
And so then she just powers through that. And recently my wife and I, when I watched this stuff, and then we were watching Life Below Zero on Disney Plus about people who live in the Arctic Circle and, you know, have to make their own fires out of rubbing two sticks together and use moss as toilet paper. And they say things like 0 degrees is pretty nice. Not too cold, not too hot. I sit there and I'm eating my cheese puffs I bought at Trader Joe's. I'm like, oh yeah, I could probably do that too, but I guess it's rough. So I mean, whenever I watch this stuff, it makes me feel so coddled when I see all of that. All right, so we've gone through the deadliest snake, deadliest spider, deadliest octopus, deadliest crocodile, deadliest jellyfish. They're all here in Australia. What more could they throw at me? How about the most dangerous bird? The last animal on our list is the most dangerous bird is here in Australia. And those are called cassowaries from the genus Casuarius, native tropical forests of New Guinea, East Nusa, Maluku Islands, and northeastern Australia. They look like little ostriches, kind of. Cassowaries feed mainly on fruit, although all species are omnivorous. They include shoots and grass seeds. Cassowaries are very wary of humans, but if provoked, they are capable of inflicting serious injuries, including fatal to both dogs and people. It has often been labeled the world's most dangerous bird. How could that be? Here's why. The inner or second of the three toes is fitted with a long, straight, murderous nail, which can sever an arm or eviscerate an abdomen with ease. There are many records of natives being killed by this bird. A 2003 study showed of 221 cassowary attacks, 150 had been against humans, involving people trying to feed the animals. So far, it says there's only one human death reported among these 150 tacks. So it's not a lot. But then again, how many other birds do you know kill people? So the cassowary, it's like the velociraptor. You remember that scene in Jurassic Park where at the beginning, the paleontologist, what's his name? Played by Sam Neill, I think. Oh, my goodness. I'm totally blanking on that now. Alan Grant is Alan Grant, played by Sam Neill. Okay, I got that. Alan Grant. And the kid is there, and he's showing the velociraptor in the dig. And the kid is like, that's not scary. And then he goes over and he takes out the velociraptor's claw. And he's like, you think this isn't scary? They'll slice you here and here. Like slices him with his claw, like their gut. And he's like, your intestines and stomach fall out. And, you know, and he goes on and on. He says, so try to show a little respect. As a great scene. But so the velociraptor, you think, you know, birds evolved from dinosaurs. The cassowary is basically essentially an evolution of the velociraptor, which, by the way, the velociraptor in Jurassic Park, the real velociraptor looked more like the cassowary. It was probably half that size and covered in feathers, but it acted the same way. It would charge at you, and it's got like this claw on its toe that can slash people's arteries, slash their stomachs. So if I come across a cassowary here, I will let that bird have its space. I will just stay with the black swans and be amazed that I can see a black swan here. Though I've only seen them in Perth. I don't think I would see them on the East Coast. So, well, I hope that was enjoyable for you all to listen to from the luxurious comfort of your own homes. And if you're an Australian listener, you may say, oi, Trent, there's no worries there. You're kind of overblowing it a little bit, aren't you? And that's a terrible Australian accent, too. But hey, it's Free For All Friday, time to have fun. Please pray the rest of my trip goes well to evangelize people here in Australia, to give talks, and to bring me safely home to my family. Grateful for all of your support. Be sure to go to trendhornpodcast.com to check out all of our bonus content there. I hope you have a very blessed day and a very blessed weekend. So many blessings to you from down under. This is Trent Horn signing off.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit trendhornpodcast.com.